comes to mind. Puritanical comes to mind. In terms of my language that, you know, you and I have used before, outrage is at the core of this. It's actually at the core of both of the topics that you want to talk about. In the case of e-cigs, it's the outrage of the government and of the medical establishment. And, you know, they're outraged at the tobacco industry. They got fooled with filters. They got fooled with light cigarettes. And they're determined not to get fooled again. They hate the tobacco industry. They don't want to see the tobacco industry profiting. And they are so angry that I think they'd rather see more people die than see the tobacco industry continue to make money.
Wow.
Going back to it, isn't about official outrage, it's about the public's outrage. The public got told that this vaccine was all benefit and no harm, and they didn't do proper informed consent. And it turns out there's a downside to the vaccine, and they're outraged at having been misled. So you've got two technologies here, or two innovations, both of which do some good and some harm, almost certainly do more good than harm. But outrage at the harm they do, or outrage at the organizations that are profiting from them, is such that we're forfeiting the good because we're overreacting to the harm. Does that make sense to you?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And I think one thing that I hadn't thought of was that I always think of outrage as something that affects the general public, but not so much something that would affect officials at the CDC. I tend to think of them as being scientists, as being objective, but in the vaping case, it sounds like they're the ones who are outraged, whose judgment and honesty is being affected by their outrage.
Yeah, they're people. Just as you think of them as just scientists, they think of themselves as just scientists. But in fact, they're people, and on a wide range of issues, from e-cigarettes to vaccination, their outrage gets in the way of their doing good public health. It's right up my alley. But the e-cig thing, when you think about it, is just extraordinary. I mean, it's as if, you know, teenage pregnancy were way down because instead of having intercourse, kids were necking.
Uh-huh.
And the CDC was out there saying, you know, teenage sex hasn't changed and necking often leads to intercourse.
Right. And so they're making a big assumption with the e-cigarettes that they will lead to smoking cigarettes, when it sounds like this is really unknown, and also unknown whether it could be pretty big effect the other way, that we might be seeing more kids vaping, but we are seeing fewer kids smoking cigarettes.
I mean, there are, I don't know how much detail you want to go into on this, there are at least six effects that we know vaping has, and three of them are benefits and three of them are harms. And we simply don't know yet, which ones are bigger than which other ones, or which ones are going to be bigger over the next generation than which other ones. You want me to list the six?
Well, you listed it in your in this report, I think. I think it was more like 11. But yeah, why don't you list the six? Because I think that would be helpful.
I didn't actually reread what I wrote.
Oh, okay.
What I wrote is better than what I'm thinking.
No, it's rather, well, if you've narrowed it to the six most important, that might be better. So why don't we talk about the six?
Here are the six that were in my head as I was thinking about this call. I'll do the three harms first and then the three benefits.
Okay.
Okay. Harm number one, for some people, e-cigs are a gateway drug. They're attracted to e-cigs first and then move on to cigarettes. You know, harm number two, for some people, e-cigs are a crutch. They would have quit altogether if not for e-cigs, but instead of quitting, they switch to e-cigs and they remain addicted to e-cigs.
Okay.
Harm number three is, for some people, e-cigs are attractive, whereas smoking isn't. They were never going to smoke. And if e-cigs didn't exist, they wouldn't have any nicotine habit, but but because e-cigs exist, they wind up vaping.
Okay.
You know, and we know all three of those exist. We just don't know how big they are.
Okay, good. All right.
Now, here are the three benefits, and we know they all exist, but we don't know how big they are. For some people, e-cigs are a way to quit smoking. If not for e-cigs, they'd still be smoking, but e-cigs nurses them off of smoking.
Okay.
And since e-cigs are, you know, almost beyond doubt, less harmful than smoking, you know, anything that replaces smoking with e-cigs is a huge net gain for health.
Right.
So that's benefit number one. Benefit number two is for some people, e-cigs are a choice versus cigarettes. They're definitely going to do one or the other, and they can be influenced on vis-a-vis which one they pick.
Okay.
And you know, that's established too. There are people thinking, well, you know, I want something. You know, I want something in the tobacco, you know, line, and I'm torn. You know, I don't do either one right now. I'm torn between smoking and vaping, and you know, if you can get them to vape instead of smoking, you know, that's a huge harm reduction.
Right.
And then the third benefit is for some people, the choice isn't either or, but how often. They are smokers, and they're going to remain smokers, but they smoke a great deal less because of e-cigs availability.
Okay.
You know, so there's three benefits and three harms. And, you know, the big harm that they talk about most is other than the intrinsic harm of e-cigs. There is some evidence, as you know, that nicotine damages young brains, and the additives in e-cigs, the sort of the chemical brew in e-cigs, are of unknown health effects. But there are probably, you know, in that huge number of chemicals, there are almost certainly some that are weak carcinogens. So it's not like e-cigs are harmless. But nobody worried about additives very much, and nobody worried about nicotine's effect on the brain very much when people were burning tar and getting emphysema and lung cancer and the rest. So, I mean, yeah, the health effects of e-cigs are real, and their exact size isn't known, but it would be shocking if they weren't enormously safer than smoking.
Because we know how bad smoking is for the lungs because of the tar. So there's this, so that's the part that is a really big known risk with cigarettes.
Exactly. And it's almost inconceivable that anything that doesn't involve burning is going to be anywhere near as dangerous as burning. But when they're not talking about the intrinsic harm from e-cigs, then what they're usually talking about is the gateway drug issue e-cigs lead to smoking. And the thing, and there's no question that, you know, I mean, all niches are filled, right? Life is complicated, people are infinitely variable, and there have got to be people who vape for a while and then say, oh, I don't like this, I think I'm going to try cigarettes instead. So, I mean, I'm sure that exists. But what perplexes me is the same people who say e-cigs are a gateway drug to smoking, and, you know, e-cigs will, you know, increase the amount of smoking. They also say that e-cigs have much more nicotine than cigarettes, which apparently is true. And that, you know, a Juul habit is going to feed your nicotine addiction much more successfully than a cigarette habit. And that apparently that's true. I mean, I don't know it firsthand, but everybody seems to agree that that's true. But I have a real hard time understanding how that can be true and the gateway drug phenomenon can be a big deal. I mean, if vaping is gives you a better hit than smoking, and it has all kinds of collateral benefits, like you don't smell and you know, it's cleaner in a variety of ways. I mean, if e-cigs are sort of obviously a better way to get high, to get the pleasures of nicotine than smoking is, then why on earth would e-cigs lead to smoking? it would seem to me that smoking would lead to e-cigs.
Yeah.
I've asked that question from time to time of public health people, you know, how can e-cigs be a gateway drug, which you say, and e-cigs be much more satisfying than tobacco and smoking, which you also say? I mean, if it satisfies the addiction much more effectively, why would it be a gateway to something that doesn't work as well?
Have they been able to answer that for you?
No, they never seem to answer it. The sense I have is the research that shows it's a more satisfying nicotine hit is different research than the research that shows it's a gateway. And I suspect sometimes it's a gateway for God knows what reason. But it would be surprising to me if it were a very major gateway, given that it's a very satisfying habit without the gateway.
Interesting. Well, it seems like for young people, the peer pressure is also the kind of the big motivation for a lot of these things. And so,
you can imagine if you move in a group that says vaping is so, 2016, and we've all moved on to cigarettes, you might be.
I suppose, right. So that's, it's really up to the kids whether they decide which one is cooler, then they will do the one they think is cooler.
I think there's truth in that.
It seems like it's more like cigarettes are going to seem very 20th century to young people today. So, I was interested in your analysis of this press briefing and press release, since I've dealt with many in my years as a reporter, and it was telling that the press release had a lot of statistics, but did not have a statistic on the decrease in cigarette smoking, which is one of the sort of more interesting statistics in the report.
Yes. I mean, it's like not shocking that authors of news releases, decide what they want to emphasize and what they want to sell, and then cherry pick their data, without lying. At least usually without lying, they cherry pick their data to give the misimpression they want to give. And I mean,
You've cut out. You've cut out. Are you still there?
Yeah. No, you cut out, and now I've got you back.
You cut out.
Where did I lose you?
We were just talking about the fact that the news release had cherry picked data to give the impression they want to give, and then you cut. That's when you cut off.
Yeah, I mean that's what you'd expect a corporation to do, and maybe it's not that shocking that CDC acts like a corporation. What's shocking to me is not their dishonesty, but their goal. I've got used to the fact that, like everybody else, they tell half-truths in the interests of their goal. So, when they try to convince people to get vaccinations, they don't talk much about the downsides of vaccination and the dangers of vaccination, because they're selling. But what they're selling when they sell vaccination, they're right about. So they're telling half truths in the service of a truth.
Okay.
But when they sell this vision that e-cigs are just as dangerous, maybe even more dangerous than smoking, and that it's not progress when kids decide that e-cigs are cooler than cigarettes, when they sell that, my quarrel with them isn't that they're dishonest. I mean, it is dishonest, but it's dishonest in a way that's deadly. When they sell vaccination, they're being dishonest in order to save lives.
And when you say it's deadly, is that because it could influence behavior in a harmful way, or because it just sows distrust in CDC and makes it hard for people to trust their other messages?
No, I mean the former. If you convince large numbers of people that vaping is kids or parents or just plain old adults that vaping is horribly dangerous and they might just as well keep smoking, that it's not progress to switch from cigarettes to e-cigs, then they've given up on being able to quit cold turkey, and so they just keep smoking. who neither smokes nor vapes, is trying to decide which to do, and, you know, they see all this anti-vaping propaganda, they decide, well, I guess I might just as well do the old-fashioned thing and smoke.
I see. In other words, right, it's a dishonesty that could lead to people doing the more dangerous thing. Now, when you talk about, just to sort of go back to this, you know, when the health officials give half-truths to sell something that is true, wouldn't there be a way for them to do it honestly by saying, well, you know, there are some very small risks to vaccines, but they're very tiny compared to the huge benefit and very big risk of getting the diseases that your kid might get? So couldn't you just as easily do it honestly?
Well, we don't want to get into vaccination in any detail, but I am a fervently a believer that, you know, vaccination is a good thing. But it, you know, but for many diseases, let's take measles since that's big in the news. For many diseases, the case for getting vaccinated against measles is mostly in the future tense, not in the present tense. In the present tense, unless you live in Williamsburg, unless you live in a pocket where there is or is likely to be a measles outbreak where lots of people are unvaccinated, unless you live in such a pocket, the likelihood of your getting measles is extremely low. And if you get measles, the likelihood that you'll suffer serious consequences is fairly low. And you multiply extremely low times fairly low, and you get a very tiny risk from going unvaccinated.
Right.
There is also a very tiny risk from being vaccinated. They're about equal.
Okay.
They're both tiny. The difference is, if everybody decides there's not much of a case for vaccination, and everybody stops vaccinating their kids, then measles will come roaring back. So in the present tense, the case for getting vaccinated isn't that strong. It's only strong in the future tense. It's only strong because if we all think short term and we all decide, well, there's not really much reason to get vaccinated, we'll all turn out wrong.
Oh, I see. And so what they don't want is people being selfish and saying, I'm going to skip this for my kid, because that could actually put a bunch of other people in danger in the long term if enough people did that.
Exactly. If everybody relies on herd immunity, we won't have herd immunity.
Right. That is the key thing.
Yeah.
Now.
Relying on herd immunity isn't irrational.
Yeah.
Relying on herd immunity is selfish but sensible. They don't want to tell you that for a very good reason. So they don't tell you.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. I could see that. But, to get back to why, it's often fairly transparent why people putting out press releases have an agenda, why they want the reporters to why they want to spin things a certain way and hope the reporters pick up their spin. But in the case of CDC, it is a little hard to understand, well, why don't they just want to be straightforward and tell people, smoking's way down, this is great, we're a little concerned about this vaping, it's way up, we don't really know what it's going to do. Why are they so motivated to spin it in this way that makes it sound like, oh, it's this terrible public health crisis, you know, this equally terrible thing is now on the rise?
I don't know the answer. I mean, my hypothesis is that it has something to do with their own outrage. But, it's worth bearing in mind that the medical establishment of the United Kingdom reached exactly the opposite conclusion. And in the UK, they are encouraging vaping on the grounds that it's way safer than smoking.
Interesting. Well, I also wondered if it sort of has to do with the self-interest of CDC in wanting to keep up a certain reputation, and so they want to take a tough on smoking stand, which means tough on vaping too. That they want to seem like they're being tough on all public health and potential public health threats.
I think that could be true. I mean, harm reduction is at the core of public health, but it's always sort of emotionally problematic for public health people to advocate something that's harmful on the grounds that it's less harmful than the alternative.
That's interesting. And you brought up needle exchange, which is also, I guess, something that where people have mixed feelings. But there you said CDC has come out and said needle exchange is okay because it's better than not having it.
Yes. But as you know, that was controversial within the CDC and controversial, you know, in the society at large. So, I mean, it may be difficult for public health professionals to, you know, to say that something that is not, you know, it's not good for you. You know, we'd be better off if nobody vaped. But it's so much better than smoking, and it does seem like it's a replacement for smoking for a lot of people, both smokers who are trying to quit and non-smokers who are trying not to start. So we're gonna encourage it as way the lesser of two evils. They have trouble deciding to do that, and they explicitly decided not to do that, whereas in the UK, faced with the same data and the same kind of society and the same, you know, pretty much the same dilemma, reached the opposite conclusion. And it's very interesting. In the UK, they routinely say the US has a different attitude than we have. In the US, they very rarely say the UK has a different attitude.
Oh, and it could be cultural. As you said, puritanical. You know, I could see that it could have to do with American culture and the role that the sort of the health police here see themselves in.
It may be. It's certainly Puritanism is part of what's going on, and, you know, I'm not sure I know that the U.S. is a more puritanical society than the U.K., but, you know, maybe it is. I mean, if we were talking about France, that would make sense.
It would, yeah. No, I don't know. I think it probably is in some ways, but and that would be an interesting comparison to make. But, you know, I saw that you had quoted a number of times the statement, you know, that tobacco in any form is unsafe. And I guess technically you could sort of consider e-cigarettes a tobacco product, though it sounds like the nicotine is derived from tobacco, but that it's sort of vaguely a tobacco product. But
as you know, the FDA had to deem it a tobacco product. It was a legal dilemma, because if it wasn't a tobacco product, they couldn't regulate it. And they just deemed it a tobacco product. And you know, I mean, as a matter of common sense, there are ways in which it's tobacco and there are ways in which it's not.
Yes. It makes it confusing because every time,
it's like, you know, if you extract from marijuana the oil that gives marijuana its potency, and you sell, you know, the oil, is it marijuana? Well, kind of is, and it kind of isn't.
Yeah, a little different there. If the thing that was really harming people with marijuana was not in that oil, then you might say, okay, there's always this implication when that you see this statement over and over, you know, tobacco products in any form are unsafe. And I think that when people read that, that it's easy to think what they mean is they're comparably unsafe. Not, well, you know, one is really, really bad and one is kind of maybe possibly bad, but we're not really sure.
I mean, it's very fundamental to any kind of risk analysis, not just in public health, but in, you know, industrial risk and any kind of risk analysis. It's absolutely fundamental that safety is not a dichotomy, you know. And anytime you say something is safe, you don't mean perfectly safe. And every time you say something is unsafe, you don't. That's not telling you how unsafe. To say any kind of tobacco product is unsafe, you might just as well say, you know, any food is unsafe or any chemical is unsafe. That, you know, it doesn't help you tell which ones are serious problems and which ones are much less serious problems.
Well, and there's also the known risk versus unknown risk. So it sounds like, I mean, we understand, and there's a ton of data on the risk, the lung cancer risk from the tar and the emphysema risk from the tar and the heart disease risk. But the brain damage risk seems to be a little more tenuous.
Yes, I mean, they don't Yeah, I mean, they have some research now to suggest that nicotine is harmful to growing brains. It's not, you know, I mean, it hasn't stood the test of time, but, it, you know, there's more than no evidence that is true. But even if you buy that that is true, it would be very shocking to interpret that as a risk comparable to the risk of burning tobacco.
Well, it seems like there's sort of an analogy with the headlines I've been seeing lately with moderate alcohol consumption, which tend to say things like all alcohol consumption is unsafe, which kind of implies that if you drink a beer twice a week, you're just putting yourself in just as much harm as if you drink, you know, three a day or binge drink a couple times a week. And I think, well, you know, how bad, it sort of turns it into a dichotomy. Like, okay, no drinking is safe, so there's this, you either have to be a teetotaler or you might as well drink as much as you want. But the data really shows something very different, which is that the risk is pretty low if you drink a couple drinks a week and, you know, pretty high if you drink a lot.
That's exactly right. And, of course, as you know, there's more and more research that alcohol has benefits. I don't think there's any research that vaping has health benefits. Although I don't know if it relaxes you, maybe it has some kind of health benefit.
Right, but it is a huge benefit for smokers.
Alcohol has real benefits.
Yeah,
and almost every article you read on the benefits of alcohol will have an obligatory paragraph that says this doesn't mean you should drink, when it obviously does mean you should drink.
I know. Why would they do that? Is it just fear of, you know, I mean, when you look at the sort of the same thing with vitamins, I mean, there are studies that show some harms from vitamins. And yet when people almost do the opposite, you know, oh, well, this doesn't necessarily mean you should stop taking your vitamins. But it seems like vitamin pills and alcohol sort of have the same kind of mixed record of some, you know, possible benefits of some with some people and some potential harms. And yet it seems like, yeah, that health reporters are really reluctant to tell people to stop taking their vitamins and very reluctant to say it's okay to have a couple of drinks a week.
And very reluctant to quantify or even like rank order serious risk versus not so serious risk, big benefit versus small benefit, you know, and start doing risk-benefit comparisons. And, you know, but that's true across the board. I mean, you know, when you talk about fluoridation, you've got the people who claim that fluoridation is evil and the people who claim that fluoridation is harmless. And it's very hard to find people who claim that fluoridation does some good and some harm and more good than harm, so we do it. Today, opioid addiction is being adjudicated in Oklahoma, and it's the same issue. Opioids do enormous amounts of good and enormous amounts of harm, and the society's goal ought to be to find ways to maximize the good and minimize the harm, and instead we oscillate between thinking they're all good and thinking they're all harm.
That is that is so important. In fact, we need to do when you're in your next stop. I want to do an interview with you on the how to think about opioids, because it seems like that is a big problem that people are having and how to come to terms with this. So I wondered if you have any more things you'd like to say about vaping, or if you want to sort of switch over to talking about the vaccine issue, the dengue vaccine.
I think we can switch.
Okay, do you want to keep this all on one voice memo, or do you want me to turn it off and start over with a new one?
Why don't you? I think that's a good idea. Turn it off and start over.
Okay, here we go.
You know.